Well, hello. You are listening to Good Girl to Goddess. This is a show where you're going to see your patterns, own your power, and claim your potential. We're living in epic times for women, but it's up to us to create our own evolution revolution from the inside out. I'm Joy Balma, and I'm going to be your host on this adventure and your Good Girl to Goddess Sherpa. I'm a coach and author of women's empowerment books and personality typing. So are you ready to go from good girl to goddess? Let's do this.
Welcome to Good Girl the Goddess, the podcast. I am so excited that you're joining us today because we are talking about expectations, and we're going to break down the myths and the lies about expectations and how we shoot ourselves to death. And we really make ourselves miserable doing this. And so we're going to talk to Jill Jarabak. She is our guest today. And I'm so excited to introduce you to this this sovereign queen. And let me introduce, tell you her bio here. Jill is a certified fearless living coach, a spiritual teacher, and a professional communicator. She supports her clients in releasing who they believe they are expected to be so they can be the person they were born to be. She helps people live with passion and purpose while grounding in spiritual connection and tuning into their own inner voice. Jill presents inspiring and practical messages on releasing expectations, living intentionally, communicating from connection, developing spiritual practices, and expanding relational intelligence. I just love that, Jill.
Thank you so much, Joy. Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Yeah, well, we got to put our big girl panties on for this talk today, don't we?
I think so, yes. It takes some big girl work to release expectations, that's for sure.
I know. You know, I remember the time where I realized that my ideas of happiness, in other words, my expectations of what happiness mm-hmm. is, were actually in the way of my happiness.
Exactly. And that realization is such an important awareness to start the releasing. You can't release it if you don't know it's there.
We don't know how much we're holding all these shoulds against ourselves and against other people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I should be thinner. I should be in a relationship. I should be farther along in my life right now. I mean, the list goes on to even what we do to other people. Like, my husband should eat right.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as women, I'm not sure because I don't dwell in a male body, but as women, I think we internalize those shoulds from other people and make them our own. So some of the examples that you gave are really leading back to our childhoods and what message was given to us in the form of an expectation, and we don't even realize we're carrying those as our own. It's a false truth, but it's a truth in our minds because we're not aware of it yet. So we're living according to that expectation that was ingrained in us throughout, you know, whether it was through school or parents or friend groups. But that's where they usually stem from, and that's why the awareness piece is so, so important.
Let me ask you this. So I'm going to give you an expectation, and let's break this down. Tell me what mm-hmm. you think. Like, let's say that you grew up with an expectation that people shouldn't be late.
Mm.
Okay? Let's say that was driven into you. And so when people are, and so you're never late, okay? So let's say people are, someone is late with you, like they're late 5 or 10 minutes and they just bluster in and they're just like, oh, I'm so sorry, but I didn't, you know, I did the best I could, you know, but I'm a little late, but I'm here. And so you have this big, you know, expectation that people shouldn't be late. Is that something that we should be breaking down? Like, is that a judgment and an expectation all wrapped into one that we're then making ourselves and everyone else miserable? Is this what you're talking about?
That's exactly it, yeah, because I'm coming into that interaction with that person expecting something of them that I haven't even shared with them, and maybe I don't even realize it. I just am anxious or I'm getting frustrated as I'm sitting there waiting and they're late. And I'm not realizing that this all stems from this value that was turned into an expectation that no one should be late. And that's when we start to bump up against each other and lose connection with each other, because I might go into that interaction just not focused, maybe having a little chip on my shoulder, and the other person feels like they already did something wrong showing up to the conversation.
So they're 2 minutes late and you're already ready to just pounce on them with your judgment that they're wrong and they are disrespecting you. It could even go into, you're late and that means you disrespect my time, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right, exactly. That's a great way to think of it, is it's something that's attached. So it's either a value that may have had a great beginning, a great positive beginning, but it's turned into something where we're measuring each other and we're judging each other. And that's no longer a value, because that's my personal preference, or that's an expectation that's ingrained in me. So, and I don't even know I'm putting that out into the world.
So what you just said was personal preference there.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that my idea that people shouldn't be late is my personal preference and that I shouldn't hold other people to that? Or explain that a little bit more.
You have an expectation of yourself that people should not be late or you should not be late. You can shift that towards the positive, still keeping it a value of yours, by saying it is my intention to practice. I'm willing to practice showing up on time. And then it becomes something that you're doing instead of something you're putting on other people. Yeah, and then along with that, so that you improve your connection with other people, you might want to add, I am willing to practice honoring the time schedule of other people, or honoring the fact that not everyone has this value. Because then you can enter into that conversation without judging them if they were running late.
So let me give a practical example. My highest value is to eat well and to work out and to honor my body temple. And so I walk in and I see my husband with his big breakfast of carbs and, you know, waffles and pancakes and sausage, and I'm walking out the door to go to the gym, and, you know, he's not doing my agenda, right? He's doing his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is that our expectations are really only for ourselves, our personal preference, and that we shouldn't be shooting other people with the ideas that we hold for ourselves. Is that right?
That is one aspect of it, yes, definitely. And then the other aspect is you don't want to turn those shoulds in on yourself and have them become a shameful thing. So in your example, mm-hmm. if you sat down with your husband and ate a piece of bacon on your way to the working out, I wouldn't want you to be thinking in your head, I shouldn't have eaten that bacon. I shouldn't have eaten that bacon. You want to be in a space where you can celebrate eating the bacon and working out. That bacon was delicious, and I get to go move my body now. It's just that subtle shift, but it's so empowering because it moves us out of the shame circle.
Yes. And if I look at those last examples of people shouldn't be late and my husband shouldn't be eating a big pile of carbs and not working out and I shouldn't eat a piece of bacon or whatever it is, it's like what I can see is if we hold all these expectations, it's really leading to like misery, complete misery. It's in division and resentment between our partners. And it's stopping us from loving other people. Let's say the person's 2 minutes late. Then the assumption is you've disrespected me and I'm going to be angry and miserable.
Mm-hmm.
The husband who's eating the carbs for breakfast, you know, I can't love him because he's eating pancakes. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Right?
Right.
And then we eat the bacon and then we can't love ourselves. I mean, it is like a spiral, isn't it?
It is a spiral, and I think when you think of these examples of, you know, walking in on your spouse eating food that you would not choose for your own body, what's really behind that is fear. And maybe the fear is he's going to die early. Maybe the fear is he's going to have a heart attack. Maybe the fear is there's always a fear underneath of all of that. So the shoulds don't. The shoulds that lead to shame don't rise out of just, well, I just like it that way. It's a true, honest fear deep within, and it's usually tied to our love and connection, which makes it so insidious because then it actually ends up tearing us apart if we hold on tightly to that expectation.
Shoulds that lead to shame. Wow, that is so powerful. And yeah, it just gets in the way of our loving life, our loving heart, and our loving relationships. And, you know, I can see this even in friendships or in all relationships, how we hold people to certain judgments and expectations that really are have nothing to do with the other person. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing. We're just like pasting it on them and our ideas of what people should do. And yes, it's a very exciting topic. If you want to have, if you want to be free, if you want to really love people, right, you can't be putting your expectations on them. So let's talk about how we put expectations on ourselves, Jill.
Okay.
Because we talked a little bit how we're pasting it on other people. How would you start with that? Like, can you give me some examples maybe in your own life or that you can think of that would explain like how we put expectations on ourselves? And
I think I'll stick with an example that a lot of women I find can relate to, which is our relationship to our body. And we do have all of these expectations on ourselves that grow out of cultural expectations. They grow out of what our what we saw our mothers do with their bodies, our grandmothers do. And so for me personally, I'm an emotional eater. When my emotions are getting the best of me, I turn to food. And that was a pattern that was modeled for me. I have had to break the pattern of shitting on myself when the emotional eating starts to happen and start to walk it backwards. I became aware of the emotional eating issue, and then instead of honoring, okay, this is where I'm at, I instead decided to shame myself for it. And that's where the shoulds come in. And so I would have my bag of potato chips and my chips and be sitting here judging myself the whole time I'm eating them. And as women, I think we do that a lot, whether it's trying on new clothes or we leave our old clothes hanging in the closet that no longer fit or whatever it is. And then we get stuck in that same spiral downward where we just feel worse and worse and worse about ourselves. And for me personally, I end up in a place of, well, it doesn't matter anyways, so I might as well just go ahead and eat the ice cream as well, or I might as well go buy this next size up. And so breaking it for me was about taking that awareness and saying, what do I need in this moment? Instead of, oh, I'm just going to eat it anyways, or I'm just going to need a bigger size, saying, what do I actually need? What do my emotions need? What does my heart need? What is my body telling me she needs? And so it's an active pattern that we have to break. And I think that shitting on ourselves follows that same exact pattern. It's almost like a flow chart. Are we going to take, you know, the spiral downward into shame, or are we going to walk the staircase upwards towards our glory, towards our goddess, as you put it, for your work? You know, it's just, it's that cycle that we, I think every woman goes through it every single day, for sure. And I'm sure men do too, but we're talking about girls today.
Yes. It's so true. That is such a good example of how we, like, I should be a smaller size. I should resist these carbs, or I should, as we were talking about earlier, it's like this all of a sudden becomes a way we stop loving ourselves and we stop being kind to ourselves. It's like you say, it becomes a shame spiral and a feedback loop if we do something that isn't perfectly up to our expectations. Like, give me another example that women can relate. Holding an expectation that can then lead to shame or is connected to fear.
The superwoman syndrome. And I think a lot of times this gets assigned to women who are mothers. And at the same time, I think it applies to all women because we are all trying to do all things and be all things to all people. And that's the root of expectations right there. And it gets us into silent contracts. It gets us into all these different ways that we expect ourselves to show up in the world. for me, a superwoman day is the day that I'm not really getting anything done because I'm trying to do everything. And then I create my own little shame tornado downwards because I'm saying, well, I was going to make this for dinner, and I was going to go here, and I was going to run these errands, and I was going to see these clients, and then I only get a few of those things done, and then I feel bad about myself. If we were able to release that superwoman image and say, what's healthy for me is one thing at a time with my full presence, and to honor what we get done instead of what we don't get done, we start to move away from this expectation, shame, spiral, the shoulding kind of behavior.
I love what you're talking about just one day at a time, one moment at a time with your full presence. Because I think that tied to expectations, Jill, is the ego in general. Because okay, if my children act a certain way, if my husband acts a certain way, if my body's a certain way, then I can feel good about myself and my sense of self is intact. So if those things aren't happening, then I can't feel good about myself. We're attached to things being a certain way in order for us to feel good about ourselves. And so that's a big thought.
It's a huge thought, and I think it's the wrong foundation for feeling good because it's everything outside of ourselves. So if we can just line our ducks up in a row, so to speak, then we'll feel good about ourselves. And the reality is, if we can look inward and start to acknowledge every little thing that we did towards self-love and bringing more love into the world, that's when we start to build on a really solid foundation of how it feels to feel good and where feeling good should come from. And I just used the word should to say that, but feeling good really is more empowering when it comes in from the inside out and realizing that we're here to relate to each other, we're here to love on each other, and that starts with relating to ourselves and loving ourselves well. And superwoman syndrome doesn't support that love. It just doesn't.
Because there's such a long list of demands that can never really be met. And what happens is that true spiritual maturity and just self-mastery, you've got to detach from these expectations of the way things should be, because you will never be happy, because in every moment of every day, things are not what we think they should be. It's called life. Wow, I would have totally missed that if I was like expecting this one certain experience. I would have been disappointed if I was expecting a certain experience.
That's exactly it right there. It's that disappointment, and it's going all the way back to that first example we used of a person being late. It lands you in disappointment, and then you carry that into your experience with that person or into the experience of the workshop and nothing, or in the experience of your day as trying to be the superwoman that day, and you miss everything along the way that really mattered.
And it really is spiritual presence that you're disconnecting from, because you're just living in your own ego of the way things you want them to be, and you're missing loving people, you're missing loving yourself, you're missing what is being offered to you in that moment, in that experience. So it's really about what we're losing through expectations is the presence with the moment. It's huge. And so are you willing to go a little deeper on this with me, Jill?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, because I got sort of a little bit of a conundrum here, and I'm interested to see what you will say about this. So one of the things is that we teach women that, you know, are wanting to, like, become more empowered is to create boundaries because, you know, it really has a sense of, like, this is okay with me and this is not, right? And so I think it can be confusing, because that's really important, because we need to speak up for what works for us and what doesn't. So how do we blend that with letting go of expectations? Like, what is the difference? Can you give us some wisdom about how to, like, deal with both of these things at the same time?
That is where we get stuck, I think, because, you know, our definition of boundaries in our culture, I find, is a little bit shallow, and this is where the relational intelligence piece comes in for me, is it's not just about emotional intelligence, it's about how we take that and relate to one another, and I think that's where boundaries fall short in our culture, because we say, here's my line, don't cross it. That's the typical way that we express a boundary. And the challenge with that is it's actually an expectation. If you're saying, I expect you to do this, so here's my line, I expect you not to cross it. That's essentially what we're saying to someone. We're giving all our power away in that because we're saying it's up to you whether you're going to cross that line or not. And that gets us into really dangerous territory. And for some of us, it is actual dangerous territory if it's a domestic situation or something like that, where there's some verbal abuse going on and emotional abuse, things like that. That's a whole nother conversation, I realize. But our daily boundaries, too, it just gets us into really icky territory because it's like I'm always giving you the power to choose whether or not you are going to honor my boundary or not. So I use this model with my clients because I think it's more empowering. And it takes back, it's not just taking back your power, it's empowering both parties to choose. Would you like an example of how I play it out?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So the first thing I tell people is you need to choose ahead of time what your boundary is going to be. And I'm going to just use one from my life. I have a very tough relationship with my father. And so I have had to choose what am I going to do in order to keep me safe and him safe because he tends to cross over into verbal and emotional abuse very quickly. And so I, in a quiet moment where I'm away from him, where nothing is going wrong at that moment, I have chosen to say my boundary is once you start to raise your voice, I will give you a warning. And you can choose to meet me in that warning. If I have to warn you again, I will step away until we're both calm enough to have this conversation. And so in that, I'm taking steps where I've chosen how I'm going to word it. And then if we come into a situation where that might start to happen, before it gets too contentious, I will look at my dad and say, Dad, I just want to remind you that for both of us, to feel good about this conversation, if your voice starts to raise or your fists start to clench or you start to seem to get really agitated, I'm going to draw that to your attention. We're going to adjust if we can, and if we can't, then I'm going to need to remove myself from the situation so we both feel safe. And I've only had to do that a couple times with him, and he already likes that so much better than here's my line, don't cross it. And I think that's really important. And I think we can do that in so many situations. It doesn't have to be a contentious relationship. We can do it with our kids. You know, I hear a lot of talk about teenagers right now because that's the realm that I'm in. And we can say, you know what? You're making that annoying noise again, and it grates on everybody's ears. And so I'm inviting you to not make that noise. And if you don't, you're going to have to go make that noise in your own room or outside. And so it's delivering something for everyone. So no one gets anything taken away, but at the same time, everybody's boundaries get honored.
Well, and I love how you actually just said it in a very non-threatening and non-judgmental and just a very loving way, how we say things and our intention behind it and is really important. And I really like that example. And boundaries in general is something that the good girl, and also expectations and silent contracts. All of this is like, you know, as I said in the beginning, we got to put our big girl panties on because we're mm-hmm. in it all day long. We're doing it all day long. We have expectations. We are managing boundaries. We're trying to take care of our own needs. We're trying to take care of the needs of others. And one of the things I wanted to just hit on before we close here is about silent contracts, because often the good girl, you know, she doesn't want to speak up her truth mm-hmm. because she doesn't want to look like she's needy or bossy or she has any expectation. She always wants to look like perfectly good and like, you know, superwoman, right? So she doesn't even tell you what her boundaries are, what she needs or anything. But then she's just silently angry at you all the time because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. It's all this sort of like silent thing going on that you have no idea. So there's a lot of like repressed emotions and suppressed. And so I just want to say that, you know, with just releasing expectations is not about, you know, you're going to become suppressed and repressed. There's a deeper mastery
right.
going on. There's a process of real true letting go and understanding in each situation.
Well, first of all, I would say that we're in good company because every woman struggles with silent contracts for sure. Mm-hmm. And every client that I've ever had, we have to work on this piece because it's so huge, because as good girls, we've been taught that we should be able to, you know, either meet our own needs or ignore our own needs for the good of another person. And so the first thing I always have women start working on is asking for what they need, even before we get to breaking the silent contract or boundaries or anything like that, because that simple skill of ask for what you need is not something we've been trained to do. In fact, we were trained the exact opposite. Notice what others need and take care of that. And if you can do it before they even know they need it, you're an even better girl. At least that's my experience with the good girl syndrome. And so I think it's really powerful for women to start to ask for what they need. And usually the first thing clients say to me is, well, I don't think I need anything big right now. We are building the ask for what you need muscle. And then the other question I always get is, what if they don't give it to me? And that's where the expectations swing back into the picture, because, yeah, if you start to ask for what you need and you expect them to follow through, then you've missed the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is to voice your needs and honor your needs as valid. And sometimes people are going to meet you where you're at, and they're going to say, I can do that. I can take that on. I'll help you with that. And other times they're going to say, you know what, I'm not, that's not my skill set. I don't have time for that. And then you get to choose. Am I going to meet that need for myself, or am I going to find another person that I can ask this of? Because a lot of times after one ask, especially in the practice phase, women will just shut down. But as you build the muscle, it becomes easier to say, let's get creative. What are the possibilities for fulfilling this need? Where else can I ask? How else can I serve myself? There's just endless creativity once you start asking for what you need first. So that leads to breaking the silent contract, because you're voicing it. You're saying out loud what you need.
And so what I hear you saying is, absolutely ask for what you need and want and desire and all of that. It's so important. And at the same time, let go of expectations. So it's sort of like a both and.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, you can't feel are only who they are, and trying to expect them to be different.
And I think if you can think in ways of how do we add to while we're honoring what already has been done, all of a sudden those silent contracts start to melt on their own, because everyone feels heard and everyone feels valued.
Right. And the assumption is that if you're not getting me what I want, that means that you don't love me or really care for me. And that's where the ridiculous ideas come into play,
mm-hmm.
you know?
We
attach the expectation with then a judgment about the other person, which is completely untrue. It's a made-up idea that we've decided
right.
is true. And that's often what we do. And so I always say that our judging gets in the way of our loving. And expectations are often full of our own judgment. So I would just say that it's just important, on top of what you just said, to also just look at what is the judgment statement that you're making about the other person because they didn't meet your expectation. You know, what is the judgment I'm making about this workshop because it didn't meet my expectation? And how can mm-hmm. I take responsibility for the fact that I just want to be present with the workshop as it is, or with the hot air balloon ride, or with the person that's in front of me that's trying to please me, even though it's not in the perfect way that I want to be pleased or whatever. It's like, how can I just be present to what is and love the person I'm with and love myself without this laundry list of judgments of that really serve no purpose except to take us out of the present moment, out of loving, and into this misery of judging ourselves and others. It's this is all about psychological mastery, self-mastery, relational mastery, and it's a big girl panty topic where we're looking at silent contracts that we have or holding on to. So I'll just say to the listeners, you know, are you having a silent contract like that only you know about and you're pasting that on the people in your life? You've never told them that you want something and you're expecting it from them because you never wanted to speak up. Or are you holding such high expectations of yourself that you're always shaming yourself and going into a shame spiral? Or are you noticing that your judgments of that are stemming from disappointment are keeping you from loving people and loving yourself? And so I think these are just good questions to jog within yourself and to start letting them bubble up to the surface, don't you think, Jill?
I agree. And I would just add one little thing because yeah. I think even though it's toxic and it lands us in this negativity, we always have a benefit, even though it's toxic. And the benefit of having these expectations, it's a false benefit, but it makes us feel safe because people are playing by our rules in that moment.
Oh, yes. It's about control. It's about controlling everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a good point. It's like, and that goes back yeah. to the ego, which is I need to control everything so that I can feel good about myself. If you're not eating what I want you to eat or if you're not getting me what I want you to get, I don't feel like I can love myself and my sense of self is being destroyed because you're not playing the part that I want you to play. And so the control,
yes.
patience that we put are really to control how we feel about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that powerful?
That's the root of all of it. And I think as soon as we can start to say, how am I helping myself to feel good? These expectations come into the light very quickly, very quickly.
Whenever you need someone to be a certain way so that you can feel good about yourself, you got to blow that thing up. You got to blow it up. Is this
yes.
not serving
yes.
anyone? And we need to go into this topic more, but this has been like really, I think, an eye-opener, hopefully, for our listeners to look at where they're holding those secret contracts and where they're, you know, have these expectations that are making themselves miserable and creating judgments. And it's all about controlling other people so that we can feel good about ourselves. And it's time to, like, let all that go. And this is really where your work of relational mastery comes from. Jill, tell us where people can find out about your work and do a session with you and go in deeper.
Yeah, so the best place to connect with me is my website, JillJarabak.com, has all the information. And we work from this basis of expectations and how do we release those, because every person was born to bring something beautiful into this world. And that's my whole goal in working with you, is so that you can discover what that is and start to bring it, because we need all the love and light we can get in this world.
I'm so excited to feature you on this episode of Good Girl to Goddess.
Thank you so much for having me, Joy.
Take care, everyone.
You've been listening to Good Girl to Goddess, the podcast that helps you get over your good girl and get on with your life. If you want more of this and to join the community, head on over to my website, joybalma.com, and subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a single episode.